Good evening and welcome. This is the Monday night edition of Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mally Fox. Good evening, Mal.
Good evening.
How are you?
I am just fine. How are you doing?
I am horrible. I had a restless weekend. I was not prepared to not be on the air. I was, after 4.5 years of doing a show on the weekends, it's kind of weird to have my weekends off.
I know.
So I made my kids sit around and I told them about the paranormal and Bigfoot. And then I talked to their Winnie the Pooh bear as my guest for the evening. It was really kind
of sad. Did you make little tents and a pretend campfire?
No, I was doing a radio show for them.
Oh.
So you gotta.
I know, but you're telling stories, so I was kind of picturing that rather than.
You just don't
two
follow.
Little cans
you,
and a,
you just don't follow my train, do you, baby?
I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's all good. We got a good show for you, and we got a bunch of great shows coming up this week. Tonight we are going to be talking to John Klimo and Pamela Heath. They're going to be joining us tonight talking about Handbook to the Afterlife. Mal, all the questions you ever wanted to know about what comes next, we're going to find out tonight in one encapsulated hour. We've also got coming up this week, tomorrow night, from the new season of Ghost Hunters International, Scott Tepperman, who is one of the newest cast members, is going to be joining us. The new series kicks off July 14th on the Sci-Fi Channel, and he's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about some of his personal experiences leading up to the show and, you know, kind of tease us a little bit about what to expect in this
new
season. And then on Wednesday, from the Ouija board.
Okay.
A Book of Insight, Wisdom from the Other Side. We've got two very lovely sisters, Tina and Tilde, are going to join us and talk to us about a book that they wrote with the help of the spirit world that they channeled through a Ouija board.
Interesting.
So, you know, we always hear all these negative stories about the Ouija board. Now we're going to talk about a positive book that came out of this. And on Thursday night, Paranormal in the Pop Culture with our good friend Aaron Sagers, who's a nationally syndicated pop culture columnist and entertainment journalist. He's going to come on. We're going to talk about everything from, paranormal pop culture, you know, things that have gone on from Scooby-Doo, you know, all the way to.
He's funny.
Yeah, to Nightmare on Elm Street kind of stuff. And that's a lot of cool stuff. And his website for you listening can, you can always check out paranormalpopculture.com. It's kind of a cool little website. And then Friday, Adrian Lee is supposed to be back. I haven't heard from him.
I hope his birthday party.
Well, I haven't heard back from him after his big birthday blowout this last weekend. So I don't know. Maybe he's deported out of England too. Maybe he's locked up in a Scotland jail.
Ooh.
I couldn't tell you.
Drama.
But he's supposed to be back with us on Friday doing the news of the supernatural. So he'll be in with Mally and I on Friday. So we've got a really nicely packed week. A lot of cool stuff coming up. This evening, though, as I alluded to, we've got guests returning to our show. We originally talked to these two back in the beginning stages, way back when there was barely fire or light and we were still using rocks for wheels. It was very Flintstone-y back in the Darkness Radio days. But they had written an amazing book dealing with suicide and the afterlife and what comes next. And they'd done the through channeled sessions with mediums to get these answers. And I'll tell you, it was one of the most powerful shows we've ever had to deal with. And a lot of people either loved it or hated it. But I can't tell you, we got so many emails from people that listened to it that were on the verge of suicide. And when they realized what they were facing, it changed your mind quickly.
See?
Yeah. So it was worth the pissing a few people off to, you know, you can't make an omelet without cracking
a few eggs.
Things
happen for a reason.
Well, it's time to crack a few more eggs because we've got our good friends, Dr. Pamela Heath and Dr. John Klimo are joining us again this evening to talk about their new book, Handbook to the Afterlife, which discusses the purposes and pitfalls of each stage in the afterlife, all the way from the moment of death, Mally, until the return of spirits to the physical plane, how spirits can be helped to move forward, and practical techniques for opening up communication with those who have passed on to the other side.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to this
Pretty
one.
Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the show, Pamela Ray Heath and John Klimo. Good evening.
Good evening.
Glad to have you back with us. Do we have Pamela there, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. Hey, Pamela. It's been a long time. What is it, almost 4 years since that book came out?
Yeah, and we were together at a Darkness Radio event after that.
Well, yeah, we have, but for the listeners that haven't tuned in, I'm just catching them up to speed here.
It was 2006, yeah.
Yeah, so 2006, and now you've got a new book that we just talked about, A Handbook to the Afterlife, and I had many people writing me and asking me if this was the Beetlejuice version of the Handbook to the Afterlife we were going to be talking about tonight, and I said, no, this is going to be important information, not how to haunt a house. What made you guys decide, and when we start off, John, what kind of was your decision to go in and do this book as a follow-up to the suicide book that you'd done in the past?
Well, the suicide book had its own story for behind it for coming into existence and had a life of its own. And after having done it, it was a particular kind of a focus, meaning suicide in relation to the afterlife. And once the book came out and we began to get reaction to it and looked at what was and wasn't out there in the field, we realized, and the publisher also particularly realized, that what would really help would be to have to back up a step and do a more general and inclusive kind of primer or tutorial or lead-in to the whole field of death and afterlife in general, irrespective of just suicide. And that might interest people in the suicide book who were not already read it, but also just the field in general. And then we could then see what people might want after that.
All right. And Pamela, how has this book differed from the other books that you've written or that you and John have written together?
Yeah, this book really is very, very different because from the get-go, he and I focused on making this a Cliff Notes version. John and I both tend to write very long academic books, and this one is not meant to be like that. It's meant to be a very easy read, pretty quick, pretty simple, not a lot of quotes, not a lot of references, just saying, look, we've read hundreds, if not thousands, of channeled books, and we're going to give you just a real quick summary, an overview of what we've seen in all of this material.
Well, I know that we've spoken to you guys in the past about the channeling and things that have been used to do these books. Maybe you could explain to us, John, a little bit more of, again, you're writing a book about what happens once we die. Mm-hmm. And since very few people have ever had the opportunity to die and come back and answer those questions, how exactly were you guys able to gather this information and put together this book?
Right. Well, a number of years ago, I wrote a book on channeling, that has since been considered perhaps the leading book on that subject. And that subsumes channeling as a phenomenon in the process, subsumes mediumship, which is an older term. Mediumship is really channeling deceased human spirits, or where the sources of the communication is from the afterlife or the after death. And channeling is a more inclusive term, which includes a lot of other things besides deceased human spirits. And so I wrote the book about mediumship, but also about the larger notion of channeling. And a lot of the material, the content of channeled material, as I studied it, as well as the process itself and the nature of people who do this channeling, did talk about where those communicating sources are situated, what their home locale is, where they exist now. And often they would talk about that and describe that. And over time, I came to realize there was a lot of consensus across this channeled and mediumistic material about the nature of the other side, of the afterlife, and of the process of death and the stages following death, and that this consensus, the similarity of these descriptions from the reported afterlife through channeling and mediumship were sufficiently similar that even if you didn't really have a real empirical smoking gun to prove this is who they said they were or where it was coming from, just the similarity of the descriptions over time and over the centuries, actually, was so powerful that it really gives you the weight of this great chorus of this is likely to be what's the case, even if you have other things that are leaving you doubting. And so to look at the content of channel material is in large part to look at the nature of the other side, where the communicators know more about it than we do. Now, we on this side, all we know is essentially what we read in the channeled papers, so to speak, what we hear from the other side. Now, some of us claim to be psychics or out-of-body experiencers or near-death experiencers who actually can shuttle limitedly back and forth between an incarnate physical body and earth-side density and that afterlife or other side or higher frequency, higher dimensional domain, whatever it is, and we can claim that first-hand knowledge. But most of us human beings on Earth right now don't claim to have that personal knowledge, and so we are dependent upon processes like psychic sources and channeled and mediumistic modes to get these descriptions, to get these first-hand testimonies that way. So I've been one of those who's more indirect. I am dependent upon people who say, I've either been the case of it, I've been there, or actually I don't have a body anymore, and I'm talking to you from where you're going to go after you die.
Before you started writing about the afterlife, were you a believer in life after death?
Was I? Yes, yes. Partly because I've been, well, yes, because I've been studying this field since I was a teenager, since I was a child, really. The paranormal in general, extraterrestrial, UFO area, the otherworldly, the other earthly, a larger reality, larger possibilities. It's been my passion even before I started school, except maybe grade school. And so I've just soaked up a great deal over the decades. And by the time we came to write the suicide book and now the handbook on the afterlife, I was sort of steeped in it. But now we could stop and be very careful. And because Pam had things to bring to the situation for both of the books, including the handbook, from more psychic or mediumistic firsthand experience that she could add to it, as well as all the scholarly stuff of looking at all the sources that have been published in this area, we had more to bring to the situation.
Well, Pamela, I'm curious. When you talk about channeling and the sources that you got for this book and for your first book on suicide, who are you channeling, and what exactly do you mean by channeling? Is it automatic writing? Is it the spirits are talking through you, like we see in the fortune telling movies and things like that, or is it through psychics? Where are you usually getting this information from?
Okay, I wasn't doing the channeling myself. I was coming at this from the perspective of an academician.
Right.
So I was actually working with a number of different psychics, plus we were dealing with the literature itself. There are a great many books written that have been purportedly channeled from at least the 1700s on, and actually in Handbook to the Afterlife, we go back to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Islamic Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So you can actually go back thousands of years and look at channel literature.
But when you guys, with the people that were being channeled and speaking, and giving some of this information, do they use different forms? Is there Ouija board? Is there, mediumistic? Is there automatic writing? Where do they get this information come from?
Well, it's a mixture depending on the book. There are a number of books in the 1800s and early to mid 1900s. That involved automatic writing. Some of them, like Chelsea Yarbrough, used Ouija boards. Others got this information in dreams. John mentioned, we also involved reincarnation research, near-death experiences. So it really kind of ran the gamut. When we were doing the suicide book, we also did some kind of unique interviews of spirits through mediums. And that was done primarily with three or four different psychic mediums who volunteered their time and were willing to talk to those guys. A little bit of that material is quoted here, but because of the de-emphasis on suicide, because so many people were sensitive to that topic that they just didn't want to read the other book.
Oh, okay.
But we really de-emphasized that. It's mentioned occasionally, but not so much. We're just looking at an overview of general channeled information. Sorry, that's my cat saying hello.
Well, John, if I could ask you real quickly, with the information that you get, and I know earlier you mentioned about UFO and alien, does any of the information that ever come through, is it channeled from another source, another planet, another alien life form, another reality, if you will, or is it basically people that have walked here on our planet at one point?
Well, I mean, across this whole channel literature, the one thing in common is that the sources of the information who are communicating through these modes are not physically based. They don't have a physical body like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the experiential domain, the home, the residential area they are now in, is not physical based either. So that their form of embodiment is at the same higher frequency or subtler energy or higher dimensional level as the realm they now live in. And that's true of the afterlife as well. The interesting thing about some of the extraterrestrial stuff, although that's another sort of topic, is that a certain percentage of these sources purport to be no longer physically based. even though we're talking about, you know, flying saucers and extraterrestrials and not deceased human spirits, that they are no longer physical either. And so how they move in and out of our level of reality, how they communicate with us telepathically or, you know, clairaudiently or some other way like that, there are similarities to human deceased human spirits communicating through a medium or a channel. The commonality is that when they describe where they come from or where they the native domain they reside within, there are similarities across a lot of this otherworldly, other earthly domain. And there are even cases where there are purported to be a deceased human spirit who had a life on Earth, and you can trace them historically, on the one hand, and somebody who claims to be of another planet or something, or even an angel, let's say, or some spirit being that's never been human, all together. They might be on a spaceship. They might just be floating there and being picked up by somebody who's picking them up clairaudiently in the mind's ear. And so there's kind of an ultimate cross-cultural studies of beings. Not, we're beings too. We're individuated beings, but individual beings who don't live on physical level density. And some of them are deceased human spirits in what we call the afterlife, which is a kind of a widely varied populated domain of different subgroups. And that's a whole study in itself. And then there are those who claim never to be, never have been a human or a part of the Earth lineage. And so I've studied this whole broad area, but the Handbook to the Afterlife is looking solely at the form of channeling that is traditionally called mediumship, which denotes that the non-ordinary communication that's going on in mediumship is between no longer physically living human spirits who once were physically alive and those of us who are still physically embodied. And so that's the particular terrain of mediumship, and the afterlife is the designation of that realm.
Now, Pamela, we've had the chance to work together, as you mentioned, and you were out at our science fair this last December talking about ghost hunting, and that seems to be such a huge realm and trying to make communication with the other side. Do you think that this book will be useful for ghost hunters and investigators as well?
Oh, very much so. And, in fact, I had that in mind, and, in fact, my experiences talking to the different people at your science fair when I was writing this book. The middle section of the book talks nothing about the different stages of the afterlife, as far as we can tell, and what spirits have to accomplish at each of those, plus how they can get stuck and have adjustment problems. And these are the kind of situations that you may run into with ghosts, is they may be stuck at these different stages. They may be different problems that need to be dealt with. And especially the last part of the book, interacting with the dead, that's where I sort of come out of the closet as a psychic.
Okay.
Time in print. And I talk about how to move spirits on, whether you're psychic or not, because there are ways you can do it without being psychic. You don't have to be, you know, quote-unquote a psychic to help spirits. There's a number of ways you can do it, and we kind of lay them out for you. And we also talk about, again, how without involving a psychic, you can make first-hand contact or work to make first-hand contact. And in addition, we talk about different ways you can improve your own mediumship abilities or channeling abilities.
Well, let's start at the beginning, because I know that you talk about all the different stages from death on. Mm-hmm. Once you die, what is the first basic stage that you go through?
You have to figure out you're dead. And you know, that it sounds so simple to say that, but that seems to be a real problem for a lot of spirits, because especially if they didn't believe in an afterlife, they still feel like they have a body. And
so do you feel like the movie The Sixth Sense is a good representation?
Yeah.
Where Bruce Willis just had no clue?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And he saw what he expected to see. He didn't see the boxes blocking off the door to his little basement area. So they can create this world around them and see what they expect to see and not notice what they don't expect. And it can make it impossible for guides to get through to them and tell them what's going on. And that's where you sometimes have to have psychic rescue circles.
So is that similar to, like, you know, we talk about the fact that as kids we can see things, and as we get older we seem to tune it out because we're told it doesn't exist, so on and so forth. Is it kind of working the same way in the afterworld, that maybe once our spirits are, have, you know, died and they haven't totally crossed over, but they're still walking on this plane, that they're also kind of shutting out what, you know, they're not accepting that they're dead at that point, so they're kind of shutting out things that might be considered weird or paranormal for them as well?
Absolutely. And, you know, they don't have a physical body anymore, so it can be very hard to get through to them because they're only perceiving what they expect or are willing to perceive.
Right, but that's what blows me away about not knowing you're dead. If you're trying to talk to Mally and I, and we're just sitting here chattering away,
Yeah. Wouldn't
that be a good sign if you keep walking and talking to either one of us and neither one of us flinch, we don't notice you here, we're not conversing with you?
They find it very confusing sometimes. I mean, sometimes they figure it out, but a lot of times it can just be incredibly confusing. They don't understand, like in The Sixth Sense, he didn't understand why his wife kept ignoring him.
Let me use an example here of dreaming. There's a lot of parallels between being in the afterlife or being no longer physically alive, having died, and dreaming, and being in a dream state. Now, when you're in a regular dream, you're not necessarily aware you're dreaming. You're just having experiences. The monster's chasing you, and you're running, or you're walking down a street, or looking for your car in the parking lot, and you can't find the car. And only later do you wake up from it, or something changes, and you partially wake up, and you realize, oh, I was dreaming back there. But during the dream part, you were so caught up in the dream, so immersed in it, that it was the same as regular life. Now, when someone dies, it's sort of like they're in a dream state, and they look down and they see their body or whatever clothes they expect to see, or they're looking for their car, or they're trying to talk to people to find out what's going on, but they're not aware they're dead, which is similar to they're not aware that they're dreaming. So the similarity between dreaming and being dead,
sure,
is a parallel there. And so in this case, you know what lucid dreaming is?
Right, lucid, where you're able to control your dreams.
Or where you know you're dreaming.
Right.
Yeah, when you wake into lucidity with an otherwise non-lucid dream, you become aware you're dreaming, but you're still within the dream and you can still experience the dream. So when you can experience the dream with lucidity, you can look around you and you can even begin to realize that thoughts are things and you create your own reality to an extent, because there's this kind of unified field that there's no longer an inner-outer. What you're surrounded by is really your own life of your own mind and your imagination and your memories. And it appears sort of outside of you, coming back at you. Well, the afterlife has a lot of similarities to that, especially if you don't know you're dead yet. You're caught up in a dream. When my father died, he came back to the next day after he died, to my satisfaction. I'm not trying to prove it to anybody else, but we did put it in the book, the story, my description of him coming back to see me. He was an atheist. He didn't believe anything after you died. And so here he finds himself in the afterlife, rather bewildered. He was absolutely lost, didn't know what was going on, but did remember that I had experience and understanding of these things. So he kind of appeared by my side as I was waking up one morning, and I was quite aware I was awake. And he said, "Where am I? What's going on?" And we kind of communicated telepathically, and I could see his body. And then eventually he faded away, but he was bewildered because he was like in a non-lucid dream where he was having experiences, but didn't have the meta level or the lucid level to realize that he was no longer in a physical body or no longer aware. Or he was not aware that he was dead, so to speak.
Is that why it's so much easier for people that have just crossed over to appear in our dreams? Are they actually dreamscaping in a way?
Yes, it's more in a similar wavelength. Some people call it the astral plane or the etheric. And there are different theories. There's no way to prove these theories, but maybe higher physical, higher frequency, higher dimensional, subtle energy, subtler energy, thought forms of the mental realm, the astral realm, emotional forms, emotion forms, and that these things become reified or solid, and they become part of the environment. Your external environment is now, once you're dead, or once you're out of your body, or once you're dreaming, you are literally experiencing the life of the mind, but it is held still as a function of memories, expectations, and the like. And if you're not aware you're dead, you might as well be alive. Nobody's tapping on the shoulder and saying, "By the way, you're in a dream right now. By the way, you're dead now." You're not getting either one of those.
Right.
If you're still somebody waiting to have it dawn on them, or to be slowly wakened in these sort of hospices on the other side, to be brought round rather gently to the realization that you're no longer physically alive. And for people like my father, it could be quite a shock because they didn't.
I bet, right? Yeah, I bet that's just that surprise of I'm what? Mm-hmm. You know, and they have to make that realization. We have to take a quick break. Our guests this evening, Dr. Pamela Heath and Dr. John Klimo. We're talking about the new book, Handbook to the Afterlife. And you can actually look that up, handbooktotheafterlife.com, or you can look up PamelaHeath.com or John, JohnKlimo.com to visit all of their websites. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio, Darkness Radio, right here with Mally Fox and Dave Schrader on 100.3 K-Talk. Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mally Fox. Our guests this evening, Pamela Ray Heath and Dr. John Klimo as well. We're talking about their new book, which is the Handbook to the Afterlife, and it actually is discussing the purposes and pitfalls of each stage in the afterlife, from the moment of death until the return of spirits to the physical plane, how spirits can be helped to move forward, and practical techniques for opening up communication with those who have passed on to the other side. First half an hour bled by really fast, guys, mm-hmm. So I want to try to get a couple of these questions wrapped up and then move on to some of the other points. One of the questions we had about Death, Fran in the chat room wanted to know, what happened to relatives and friends waiting in the light to guide you when you die? You know, are they just, is that fallacy? They're not really there, so people are lost when they die? How does that work?
Pam?
I'm sorry, say that again. You cut out on us?
Well, I'll go ahead. I was waiting for Pam. I thought she might want to say something there.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me?
Fine. Yeah, we can hear you. Pam, can you hear okay?
Yeah, I'm trying to talk to you.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Pam.
Okay, there seem to be two waves of spirit greeters. The first wave, which according to some spirits, they are always there when you die. The problem is you may not see them. This group of spirit greeters, they try to look like something or someone you would expect, who would also clue you into the fact that you are now dead. However, for some reason, some people just won't be able to see these spirit greeters. Now, there's a second wave of spirit greeters, which are made up a lot of family, friends, relatives, those who have crossed before you to the other side, who will show up after you finish crossing through levels. So it's sort of interesting. You actually have two separate waves of spirit greeters.
Okay. So there's two different waves of people coming through. And Mally, you had a quick question, too.
Well, yeah, my question was just, how long does it usually take for you to, or for a person to realize that they've passed on?
Oh, well, it can vary quite a bit. I mean, some people know right away. And others may take, I would guess, years. Every once in a while, I'll run into somebody who's been dead for a long time and still hasn't gotten clued in, But I think most people probably figure it out within a few, you know, days or months.
Also, the more dramatic and quick situation where you've been in an automobile accident and you're watching you find yourself floating above the accident, watching it, and recognizing yourself in the wreckage or being pulled out of the wreckage, you know, or being given the last rites there. And sometimes that can happen with people in an accident who are not dead. They are pulled out of their bodies by the trauma of it, and they have that remote viewing of the body and the situation, and then come back into the body. It's like a near-death experience, including an out-of-body component. But I'm talking here about when you know very quickly that you're dead, when you see the situation. I mean, you might even follow the body to the morgue for all we know, but it's pretty spelled out for you, boldface, that you have just experienced the separation from the body, and you're not going to get back in that body, and it's it looks like a Hollywood scene or something. But usually, if you die in your sleep, or if you were kind of going in and out of consciousness, or something like that, when you do sort of come to, and you are no longer in your body, and you are no longer in physical existence, you may not know very quickly. It's going to, you have to get some hints and clues and get your bearings, and there may be guides there to break it to you easily over a little more easily over time. Or sometimes people are left quite to their own devices for a while too. That might be part of the karma of it, that they have to there's a reason for them to be lost for a while, to not get it real quickly.
Right, you know, because I've just thought it was strange, especially when you go to places like, you know, Gettysburg, and you know, the spirits are still seen to walk around, and they act like they don't know that they're dead and that the war is still going on, but yet there's guys walking around in Bermuda shorts and black socks and sandals taking pictures of the war site, and they seem perplexed, like, what the hell's going on here? You know, I mean, again, those to me would be signs that, hey, you know, you're not here anymore. Or is it because in that situation there's so many dead people that don't realize that they're not here anymore, that they're kind of grounded, and are we the paranormal activity to them?
Well, it's an issue of consciousness. In the whole multidisciplinary field of the study of human consciousness, which includes altered states of consciousness, higher states of consciousness, the unconscious, dissociation, and so on, you can be... or look at dementia, something like that, or Alzheimer's. You can be awake. You can be orienting toward the environment to some extent. You might somewhat be able to interact with others and respond to stimuli, but you're pretty much kind of unconscious, or pretty much somnambulistic, somnambulistic. And I think that can be true of someone who is in shock, a kind of a post-traumatic state of sort of. Not yet recovering from their own deaths, their own separation from the body. There's a discontinuity. They're in a new realm. And if there's a kind of a superimposition between the old realm and the new realm, kind of like seeing double, like two slides imposed on each other, you may not have the cognizance, the level of awareness, the information processing capacity to put two and two together yet.
Okay.
Also, if you're in shock, you're not going to be able to do a good job of that either.
So now the next stage, once you've realized, hey, I'm dead, what happens then? Where do we go? What's the next level for us?
Well, ironically, it's separating from the body. And some spirits talk. Some spirits do this effortlessly. I mean, bam, they're out of the body before they even, you know what's happened. But for other spirits, they'll talk about being attached by a silver cord. And some spirits seem to feel, especially if they died unexpectedly or from suicide or an unanticipated accident, that they may be stuck to their body or near their body until the hour of their appointed death is pre-planned in sort of a kind of life blueprint that they figured out before they incarnated or took a physical
body. Oh, hold on a minute now. So if Dave Schrader was supposed to die February 2nd, 2052,
mm-hmm.
but I took my life today, does that mean my soul is stuck in my corpse, rotting in the ground until 2052?
Some people say that, and I don't know how much of that is a self-fulfilling prophecy that because they believe that there's a silver cord or that they have to stay till the hour of their death, that... they may have to stay near the earth plane for years. Other spirits don't have that problem. So it's really, I suspect part of it is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Now, when you say on the earth plane, do you mean like in the coffin in the earth plane, stuck there, or just stuck staying on this planet, on this plane?
Well, it sort of varies. There are some spirits who say that they are attached by a cord that they cannot break to their body, and that they are forced to stay there until their body rots away.
Ooh.
And there are other spirits, and they can feel literally the worms eating their body.
Oh, my gosh.
But other spirits say, no. You know, you're just sort of wandering near the earth plane. And, of course, there are other spirits who say, heck no. You know, I had no trouble at all leaving. So that sort of makes me wonder if there isn't, like I say, self-fulfilling prophecy there. That because they believe that's how it has to be, they make it so.
We have to take another quick break here. We're going to wrap up when we come back with John Klimo and Pamela Heath. Again, the name of the book is Handbook to the Afterlife, and you can check out handbooktotheafterlife.com for more information on the book, PamelaHeath.com or John Klimo, JonKlimo.com for more information on our authors. We'll be back with more from Allie Fox. This is Dave Schrader. You're listening to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio, Darkness Radio on 100.3 K-Talk. Good evening and welcome back to the show. We are wrapping up another edition of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. Our guests this evening, Dr. Pamela Heath and Dr. John Klimo, talking about their book, A Handbook to the Afterlife. And again, check that out at handbooktotheafterlife.com. There is a link for it up on our website at darknessradio.com. You can check it out. Remember to check out the rest of this week. You've got a lot of great things. Scott Tepperman, the newest addition to Ghost Hunters International, is joining us tomorrow night. We've got Aaron Sagers on Thursday night talking about paranormal pop culture. Wednesday night is we have the sisters who actually channeled and wrote an entire book using the Ouija board.
Amazing.
Book of Insights, and they're going to be sharing that story with us on Wednesday night. And then, of course, on Friday, Adrian Lee is back with brand new new stories of the strange and supernatural that have taken place this past week. And each night after Darkness Radio, you can continue to listen to the best of Paranormal Talk Radio as Coast to Coast with George Norrie comes right afterwards here on K-Talk. Our guests are back with us, John Klimo and Pamela. Thanks again for joining us, guys. It's going by fast again, as always. Let me ask again. Okay, so now that we've gotten past recognizing that we're dead, separating from the body, where is the next stage for us to go?
That first meeting of spirit helpers that we've already mentioned.
Right.
And then there's also moving through levels, with some people experiences going through a tunnel.
Okay.
Reuniting with your loved ones. It's a reunion kind of a phase.
Now, have we hit already the past or the point where we're watching our life review, or is that not happening?
Nope, not yet.
Oh, geez.
Not yet. No, we really broke it down, and we realized there's a lot of things that people have been sort of lumping together that may actually be sort of a separate stage where you can have adjustment problems. You can have things go wrong. So we looked at each of these separately. Mm-hmm. Recovering is after that. Visiting the living.
Now, when you say recovering, what do you mean? Is that kind of soothing and healing the soul?
Yes, it is. You know, it's interesting. Going through the death process can be very traumatic for some people. It can take a lot of energy out of them. It's very emotional. A lot of spirits will talk about sleeping, or they may go to a hospice. Where they get actual healing, or they may go to a quiet, meditative place.
Wait, we get restful, peaceful sleep on the other side?
Yes, you can. It's actually one of the most common things that they do for recovery.
It seems to basically be a loving, benevolent, supportive universe. And there is no real hell. You kind of make a place for yourself based upon your own deeds and thoughts and doing, so we make our own heaven or hell in a sense. We're creating our own reality all the time, and so we do judge ourselves, we do evaluate ourselves, we do see where we need to be growing and so on, and that may affect how we come back and continue to live. But basically, from all I can tell from decades of study in this area, it's not a punitive universe. It's not an Old Testament biblical God, you know, who's going to damn us to hell, or what, unfortunately, I must say, it's not what a lot of the world's great religions, Christianity and Islam, portray this, you may just be condemned forever to this invariant place, and we find no evidence of that in all our research.
Hmm. All right, now, once you've gotten past these stages, how long is it, have you found, from the research that you've done, from the day we die to the time that we can reincarnate and come back as another person?
It's hard to give specifics. There are some spirits that may go thousands of years just getting through their life review.
Oh, and thousands of years.
Yeah, if they've been really bad,
okay.
They have a lot to look at. And they hurt a lot of people. It can be a very, very long time before they come back. In terms of the shortest time possible, you know, I'm not sure what that would be, or even if there's an average time, because time is so different on the other side. I think they actually kind of have a hard time associating that.
And there's also the issue of in a lot of the mediumistic channel literature that does have as part of its subject matter what happens after you die and descriptions of these spirits' lives there in the afterlife. There is the conspicuous absence of reference to reincarnation, and so to be true to all these multifaceted centuries long sources, you don't constantly hear about reincarnation. That's one school of thought. That's one perspective, both from the heard from the afterlife and heard from psychics and channels and mediums from this side. I choose to believe in reincarnation just from my own research, and there's a whole sub-literature on reincarnation that has quite convincing evidence. But it's interesting at the same time to hear how much there is about the afterlife and the spirit realm and progressing through stages of the spirit realm, as our book talks about, after the initial death period, that doesn't really get into anything other than just progressing in a spiritual evolutionary pattern in a non-physical domain without reference to reincarnation. So reincarnation is one camp, and it's not a slam dunk that everybody sees it that way from the spiritual realm or from what we hear from the spiritual realm.
Is it our choice to be reincarnated?
Is it what?
Is it our choice if we want to be reincarnated?
That could be part of it too. Yes, I've read that perspective as well. Yes, on my understanding is when you come back into physical level density, it's very powerful. You can get a lot done here. You can imagine things and set up testing and school of hard knocks experiences in the afterlife. But it's a more rarefied atmosphere. Thinking makes it so. You look at a mountain, you imagine being at the top of it, and you're at the top of the mountain. Here on this level of reality, if you want to get to the top of the mountain, a certain amount of sweat and time and energy to get to the top of the mountain. And so to get to solve problems, to have experiences that things really sink in and learn and grow from, physical level density, as hard as it may be, is a very powerful domain for learning and growing spirit. And so I think some people, some spirits, choose this level of density to work in, or their guides suggest that they come back. And in other cases, they may not need to. They're far enough progressed that they don't need to have a physical incarnation again. I think so. In that sense, yes, it may be a personal choice.
All right. Now, I know a lot of the people are going to want to know more about the how we can communicate and start to open that part up, and maybe Pamela or John, whichever feels more confident in that, can start to tip us in on some of those points. Unfortunately, we've got only about three, four minutes left, but are there some quick tips and hints that you can give on ways to start opening up the communication for the other side?
Pam?
We talk about
dreams and meditation and opening the channel and finding mm-hmm. ways to in mildly altered states of consciousness, like going to bed at night or waking up in the morning or kind of nap reverie times in those altered states of consciousness that makes it more likely to make connection and use intentionality and real meditational focus and prayer and petitionary requests to make connection. We do have a whole section on that. So yes, there's time-honored ways to open up channels from between our level of reality and another level. And some, you know, like the Christian church says don't do it, and other religions often say don't mess with that stuff. But I don't think so. I think that locks off too much possibility of us physical human spirits to communicate with other human spirits in a larger reality.
Is it a lot easier than people would think to make those communications?
Yeah, I think we actually get contact more often than people realize, but you sometimes write it off or you don't believe it. And the most common way, which has been used for literally thousands of years, is in dreams. And then you have to try and remember what happened in your dream. So you may want to keep a little notebook by your bed that you can write it down the moment you wake up, because that'll slip away as you become more alert.
All right. We've got to wrap up here pretty quickly. What are you hoping people take from this book and that they can use going forward?
Well, for me, and we talk about it in the book, is a lot of people are rather agnostic. They don't know, they're afraid of death. The society doesn't really deal with it very well. Medical profession doesn't. Nobody does. And the organized religions have their own answers, but some people who didn't weren't raised in a regular religion don't choose those answers or don't have those answers. So there's a lot of people looking for answers, looking for their own spiritual connectedness to dying and death and what may or may not happen after it. And so our book gives you a variety of ways to look at throughout history and throughout all cultures, and from the perspective of spirits from the other side, how to look at this whole process and to make your own choices. The ball's in your court to make your own informed decisions about what may or may not happen after you die and how to prepare for it.
Well, John, Pamela, thank you very much. The book is fascinating. Handbook to the Afterlife, it's available now. You can check it out by going to handbooktotheafterlife.com. Stay tuned. We've got Coast to Coast with George Norrie coming up next. And be here tomorrow with us when we talk to Ghost Hunters International star Scott Tepperman. He'll also be joining us live in the chat room. We'll talk to you tomorrow. For Mally and Dave, this is Darkness Radio on 100.3 K-Talk.